For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You're listening to Castrol CarCast on Podcast One.
Well, Brian Deegan, 10-time medal winner at X Games, and his daughter, who's an up-and-coming NASCAR phenom, is coming in a second. And also, we talk all things cars. FirstAidSleep.com. Research shows how important sleep is to energy, physical performance, overall health. Sleep is fitness. If you toss and turn, well, maybe you're too hot or maybe you're too cold. Sleeping at your ideal temperature helps you sleep longer. The pod by 8 Sleep automatically adjusts temperature for the deepest, most comfortable sleep. Even has thermal alarm to heat you or cool you, and it'll wake you up naturally so you don't have that buzzer blaring in your ear. Instead of that noisy alarm, just let the coolness or the warmness wake you up. 94% of people who sleep on the pod sleep better. And right now, $150 off and free shipping at 8sleep.com/car. That's 8sleep.com/car. EIGHT sleep.com/car.
For just $25, you get wine and gifts. Ace's favorite stuff or products from ACS. Every single month, you get the drink you choose. It's hard to beat cool stuff and booze. Adam's Monthly Nut. Adam's Monthly Nut.
It's time for a new month of Adam's Monthly Nut. ACS and car lovers alike, get ready because February's shipment includes a Blu-ray of Adam's newest doc, Shelby American, with special features you can't get anywhere else, and a signature from the Ace Man you can't get anywhere else. A Chemical Guy's Clean Car Essentials Kit, featuring butter wax, streak-free window cleaner, two odor eliminators, and more. And lastly, in your shipment, you may find a golden ticket for you and a plus one to join us at the Corolla Family Barbecue. This $60 value is yours for only $25. Sign up for 1 month, nor keep the shipments coming. So prep your mail's box and get ready for Adam's Monthly Nut. Hurry, we will sell out.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get on. No choice. We're going to mend it. Get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend. We love that about you. This is CarCast. Max Pata is not around today. He's got Achilles issues. Yeah. So we're doing it with the boys. We're doing it with the Porcelain Punisher. We got good Matt and other bearded Matt. Over there as well.
Did that stick? Has that stuck for weeks?
No. I'm trying to make it work, Matt. It's nicer than the other ones.
Okay.
Brian Deegan's going to come on. He's a freestyle motorcycle rider. He's a race car driver. He's the most decorated freestyle motocross rider in X Games history with 10 medals all in. So, guy knows his way around a motorcycle. I think he's the first guy to do a 360 on a motorcycle.
I want to see that. We got to find a video of that.
And
by the way, his daughter Haley, who's an incredible driver, she'll be here with us.
Right. And she's coming in too.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Let's have them both.
All right. Do we have this discussion? Well, we can do it.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, we'll do that in a moment. First, there's us. Where are we at? I'm working on getting into this Trans Am race at Laguna Seca. I was working with Matt. We're a little shorthanded because Chris has been out this week, but working on trying to. I was invited to do a Trans Am race at Lime Rock, And yes, they said, if you can get to Lime Rock, we'll put you in a car. Now, I have some vague memories of who I was talking to and what it was about. I was doing an interview and so on and so forth, but I couldn't make it out to Lime Rock. But I'm trying to find out if that invitation would extend to Laguna Seca.
Well, I think that was a local invitation that might have come from the track. I don't think it came from a particular team or Trans Am.
Right.
So now we're having a nice chat with our buddy Claudio Burton, who runs Burton Racing, as well as Trans Am and some other people, to see if we can make a Laguna Seca Trans Am race happen.
Right.
Right. Which we love that idea. It's closer. You know the track. You love the track. You've had a little bit of seat time at the Willow Springs race in this car. It's been rebodied. It's got a little bit better aero. But I can see how it would be kind of exciting to get into the modern day racing car and the sequential transmission and incredible amounts of horsepower and get onto a track that you know.
Yeah. So we're looking forward to that. The guys are working on the BRE 510.
Explain this 510, because it's not the most well known of the 510s. It's not what's on the T-shirts and the posters that we see when we talk about BRE cars.
It's a privateer car. That's a sort of looking for the title of privateer car. I think, you can correct me, I think they made five 510s all in. I seem to recall that's the number. I think they had, but it's a little fuzzy in one department. They had the red and blue John Morton car that's in the Nissan Heritage Museum that Nissan owns. Then they had the blue and red. I'm just saying red and blue versus blue and red.
The dominant color.
The Morton car, the hood and the roof was red. The car I own, the hood and the roof is blue.
Yeah.
So the red and blue, they're the same scheme, just flipped, basically. I have the Bobby Allison guest car. Then there was a third team car that I believe was destroyed. And then, which was, I think the third team car that was destroyed was a blue and white car, but it wasn't red, white, and blue. It didn't have the scheme that the Morton car or the Allison, my car, guest car has. It was just blue and white. Then there was one that was yellow and white, which is the same layout as the blue and white one. They just swapped out the blue for the yellow.
Yeah.
That was a privateer car that was being shipped off to like the Dominican or something.
Yeah.
Or Jamaica or something.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Because the yellow and the yellow flag or whatever it was, the part of the world it was going to, it was like yellow was the racing color. So they did a yellow one. I think mine was probably...
So that's four.
That's four. I think there must have been one more privateer car that was probably destroyed. So I think... Now, Kalen's going to have to look up BRE 510s and see if we can sort it out. But I think there's two team cars left, and there's one privateer car left. And I think one team car and one privateer car got destroyed. But now... The reason this is fuzzy is I can't picture the scheme on the other privateer
car.
Because
before you said that, I thought there was the four cars.
Well, and now
I'm not saying
now
no,
you might
I'm
be
just
right.
saying
now,
I thought it was four. And I vaguely remember like one photo flying around, old photo of all the cars. I don't even know if it was in color, the photo, but
there was a shot at the BRE shop, and I think where I could be going south on this math is the one blue and white car that I call the team car could be the second privateer car.
Yeah.
I think that maybe there was two team cars and two privateer cars and one privateer car, the blue and white only one was destroyed.
Okay, so the car that you have now that they're working on, which was basically just a boxes of parts and not much more than that in a body. Yeah. That was the yellow Jamaican car.
It was described as, you know, partially restored or almost complete. Or whatever it is.
And engine's done. It just needs to be picked up. And we called there. They're like, what engine?
I don't know. What's up with everyone? I don't feel like I do business that way. Do you?
No.
Any
business, but the car business. We've bought and sold a lot of cars over the last 10 years. We've never done any. Why is it got to be complicated?
Well, not even just complicated. Just like, look. The car is in the condition it's in. Please describe it accurately.
Yeah.
So that we can move forward and do business. You know, that car was described as like, it's about ready for paint. Like, it's ready for paint. The engine is done. Nothing could be further from the truth.
No.
Nothing was ready for anything, and the engine is not anywhere.
Yeah.
I don't know. I hesitate to call everyone a liar, but they seem to be lying. Or at least saying things that are false that helps them.
Yeah, but there's a slight difference between like exaggerating and just not even it's a lie.
It's a lie.
It's a lie.
All right, everyone people just lie now, just sort of willy nilly.
No.
Anyway,
that was a unibody on a rotisserie, and there's no real
everything needs there's to be no taken real. Off
yeah.
and fixed.
Yeah. By the way, scraping the paint off doesn't mean it's ready for paint. It needs a lot of body work. It needs a lot of fabrication. Needs a lot of stuff.
Oh, everything. Yeah. Grills. Everything.
If you didn't have the Bobby Allison 85 car parked next to this one as sort of a template, a roadmap, if you will, on how to build the new car, it would be difficult to do. It would be difficult just because there's photos, but they're not as many. You know, like some of the Newman cars got a lot more attention because of Paul Newman. So we can go through a lot of those photos, but there's not as many, especially on this privateer car, this yellow car.
Yeah.
So having the other car as a template is a huge help.
So Kalen's seeing five BRE 510s.
I'd like to see those.
Which was my thought. I don't know that they're all together.
I got a picture here, and under the caption it says, there's a picture, I'll throw it up, of Brock with three of the five 510s built for Trans Am Racing.
Yeah.
Let's see.
I think you're going to see Morton's car, my car, and the blue and white car.
Okay.
Which is
a black and white photo.
So we can't really tell.
No, you can tell. You can tell.
Yeah. Yeah. The yellow, because the yellow had the white stripe, so that one is, it doesn't have, it's just a yellow and the white. It doesn't have like yellow and white with like with part of a red stripe, I believe. So you can see it in black and white. You can see the.
It's not all broken up.
It's a little tough to tell.
This picture is tough, but the, there's probably other cars. It's the 68 car we're trying to figure out. Looks like the Allison car to the right. Looks like, got to figure that out. Well, you can keep searching around, Kalen. There's pictures from inside the BRE shop or the Nissan shop that has a bunch of pictures in it.
Is the Morton car 46?
Yeah.
And yours is 85.
Yeah. But
the numbers
it could have been 35. You know, they could change. The numbers are a little tough to go off of. Yeah, we got the BRE 46 car, Kalen. That much we got. That's John Morton's car.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess the question is I think one team car and one privateer car was destroyed. But the question is what was the privateer? What was the other privateer car?
Yeah, what was the
car?
Other privateer car?
That's an interesting conundrum. We'll see if we can... Well, Kalen will look around existing BRE 510s or privateer 510s or three team cars or whatever it is. Anyway, that's going on. So those guys are doing all their fabrication and putting that car back together. And there really wasn't a lot of that car, but it is the real deal. It does. You can tell when you look at the way the... roll cage is set up and the way the seat mounts are set up, you can tell that's the car. Yeah. That's a beer. Yeah. 510.
We might want to check in with Pete Brock again. He might have some photos or some information because he, you know, sometimes he goes through some archives there at home and kind of remembers. And, you know, and you and I were talking as well. So we're going off of photos and a lot of black and white photos. We probably should consult with Pete on getting the right shade of yellow.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, there's a couple of color pictures of that car racing mm-hmm. with the in the yellow, but you definitely would want to consult with Pete.
Yeah.
Because if you didn't consult with Pete and he showed up, he'd tell you it was the wrong
yellow. He would tell you it was the wrong. Yeah, see, in this photo, we do have this old photo. All of the colors in this photo look darker. So this is just the way the photo was taken,
We're looking at a photo which appears to have my car, Morton's car, and then the other one I've described is just blue and white team car, the mm-hmm. 68 car. And that looks like that. That must be, you know, it must be from Brock's shop because he's got a bunch of plywood bucks like hanging from the ceiling that look like, you know, he was working on the Daytona or something. You could tell he did those bucks.
Yeah. It's Noah's Ark is up there.
So he probably had those bucks from up there.
I'm looking at the yellow car, and I hope there's no engine in it because it looks a little high in the front. And I hope those are just rollers, those wheels, because they're awfully yellow.
Well, now, Matt, I'm going to embarrass you uh-huh. on the air because I've told you multiple times that there are no more BRE road-going cars, road course cars on the planet. There's four all in. There's two roadsters, and there's three 510s. We have two of the 510s, and the Nissan Heritage Museum has one. So yeah. All of the BRE, and a few, I think the Z car was destroyed, and mm-hmm, some other 510s mm-hmm. were destroyed, and there's basically whatever we have and whatever the Nissan has, and then that's it in terms of road racing cars. But there are quite a few Baja and off-road BRE mm-hmm. cars out there, Z cars yeah. and 510s. They're kind of funky town, but of course they worked,
because
they're BRE. And I've been at Road Atlanta and seen the BRE Z car, Baja
yeah.
Z car. And what you're looking at, and the reason you're going like, why is a car sitting up high and why the wheels seem weird is because you're probably looking at a BRE Baja
yeah.
car at okay. the end of this photo. And thus the suspension travel, thus the no front air dam, thus the what looks like kind of knobby tires from here, even though it's kind of hard to tell.
It's kind of hard to tell, but yeah.
But no, I got you. It's a
I forgot
tire.
That he did the Baja stuff.
There's probably maybe one or two Zs floating around out there and one or two 510s floating around out there that are BRE Baja cars, which is cool, but I still prefer the road racing stuff.
Yeah. By the way, I listened to your interview that you did on Adam Carolla's show, your one-on-one with Pete Brock, and I know we've said it a million times, but what a fascinating guy.
Don't you find him fascinating?
Just fascinating guy and sharp and well-spoken and has just done so many things, just a lifetime of things. Fascinating even more so to us because everything he's done in his life we're interested in. We could sit here and talk all day about his hang gliding, mm-hmm. and I know you got to just touch on it a little bit in the interview, but you guys should go back to Adam Carolla's show. I think it was about a week ago, Monday. And listen to that. It's a great interview. Maybe we'll grab it for this someday for CarCast. We'll put it in one of our best ofs or something. But great interview, great guy. Look, we've known him a while now and always loved him. And when you get to sit down and do that sort of one-on-one with him, you love him even more.
He's a genius and he's a sweet man. Mm-hmm. And, you know, diabolical geniuses or evil geniuses, they're fine, but yeah. sweet geniuses.
Yeah, it's kind of rare.
It's kind of rare.
Yeah, it's kind of rare.
It's win-win. All right, Kalen, I don't know what you can you find out on BRE how many of those were there two privateer cars and three team cars, and what was destroyed? And
I'm still looking for that. Yeah, obviously John Morton's is the most famous. I ran across something called Against All Odds. I don't know if you've seen that before, but you might be into it. But yeah, I'm still looking for privateer.
Have I seen the BRE 510 movie with John Morton in it? No, I'm not from. Oh, yes. No, they did a whole kind of short or medium sized thing where they like followed Nissan, followed John Morton around. You know, they used to do those 70s things where they'd always, I don't know why, on any Sunday was like this. They'd always start with the guy like leaving his house and kissing his wife. And it's like, he's got a briefcase, but he's not going to the office.
No.
His office is a race car. They do that stupid thing. Somebody came up with this tableau of like, you had to get up in the morning. We had to show him, bye, honey. Had to show him back the car out of the house in Reseda and drive, you know, but he wasn't going to an office building.
He's a normal guy with an abnormal career.
Right, right. There were so many bad 70s themed things like that. And then, of course, he ended up at the racetrack and he was just getting into these crazy races with Horst Quecht and the Alpha guys. And then famously, they got busted for cheating. The footage of that last race he did at Laguna Seca and that car and like Horst Quecht, they were just all up in each other's grill the entire race, like bumping each other and sliding around. It was crazy, crazy insanity. And Horst didn't have to pit for fuel and John did, and Horst won the race. But Pete Brock knew that he couldn't get that far on what it was, and they went and took it to scrutineering, and they found out that like Horst Quecht had like some version of either the fuel lines were like way too fat and they were carrying extra fuel in the fuel lines, or they'd taken the bladder and like stretched it out in the can or whatever. They cheated. They'd got another couple gallons of fuel in there. They didn't have to pit, and Morton won.
Cheaters.
The race. Yeah. It's built into the sport. All right. Let me hit, we'll get Hallie and Brian in here and I'll hit Butcher Box. Oh, man. Steaks.
Ugh.
So good. Filet mignon. Man, that's the king of all steaks. Two filet mignon and one pack of bacon plus $20 off your first box at butcherbox.com/carcast or enter the promo code carcast to check out. 100% grass fed and finished beef. Free range organic chicken, heritage pork, wild caught Alaskan salmon. Each box has 9 to 11 pounds of meat, enough for 24 meals. Free shipping anywhere in the U.S., except for Alaska and Hawaii. The stuff is all top shelf. It's all the best. We eat it almost every night. Two free filet mignon and a pack of bacon. $20 off your first box at butcherbox.com/carcast or enter the promo code carcast at checkout. Either way, you like cars, you gotta like meat, right?
I got some of that at home. I got the chicken too, and I just made chicken tacos. I was just like slice them all up, throw them in the big pot, and chicken tacos. Oh, it's the best.
Yeah, it's all better than you need it. You'd think.
And
then
I made regular tacos with the ground beef, and then I made more tacos with the other meat. And
well, I don't use the word hero that often. In this case, Hallie and Brian Deegan are both here. Oh, I said Hallie. I should have said Haley,
it's
right?
Okay, everyone missing.
Yes, Haley.
Haley, and this is on me. I saw Haley out there, and I invited her in before you even got here. And I said, "Come on in," because she's been doing so much and is a fantastic driver. So,
yeah, we had a chance to
hopefully
talk.
That's okay
for a little bit in Vegas at the SEMA event, and now here they are. I was very impressed by Haley when we were talking in Vegas, and she was talking about driving stock car, for lack of a better term. I know there's a million different categories now, but I think getting her first win at Sonoma, was it Sonoma?
I got the pole at Sonoma.
Sonoma got the pole at Sonoma, and I was like, oh, Sonoma, man, that is a tough and technical track. That is not...
And bumpy?
Going in a circle for an hour. That is a lot of shifting and shafting, man. That is I've driven that track a few times, and it's always it's tough getting used to, and there's like off camber stuff and can't see over the hill stuff, and putting your car in the pole at Sonoma, that's driving. So I remember thinking,
what were you driving? Explain the car.
So I was racing in the K&N series last year there. That was my second time there. Second year in a stock car racing, full time. And it was pretty much almost like the car I race now. So I kind of moved up a level, a little bit slower, not a ton different, but what's slower, usually smaller tracks that you raced in that series. But now, since I moved up to the ARCA series, it's super speedways, stuff like that.
Oh, sounds exciting. But you got your start on motorcycles? You start with motorcycles because of dad?
I would say I rode a dirt bike. It was probably the first thing I ever really like touched as with the motor. I wouldn't call myself a professional by any means. I'm maybe like professional pit bike rider, but that's about it. But I kind of just started on four wheels a lot. I didn't really race dirt bikes. I grew up driving little kind of like 170s, those little kind of smaller UTVs, and then I transitioned into off-road carts, because my dad was racing. It was at the time when he was making the transition. It was about 2009 it was 2008 because I was seven at the time. And he's making the transition from motocross, kind of that whole world, to off-road truck racing. And so when he made that transition, I was at the track, and there was these little kids racing, and I was like, oh my God, they're my age. And I was like, I have to do this. And I was a little kid to like keep begging for things until I got it, like super annoying little kid, the one, you know, slap. But so I ended up getting a race truck for my eighth birthday, not the normal girl thing, and I was super excited. And ever since then, I just never stopped.
Brian is, as we'd mentioned earlier, the most decorated freestyle motocross rider in X Games history. So that's quite a distinction. The stuff you guys are doing on motorcycles, I always laugh because when I was a kid, I had a poster and it said CZ Rider on it. And it was a guy with about, he had about 3 foot of air and he was doing a quarter of a cross up. And that was considered poster material.
Yeah, you're like, hang this on my wall.
Literally, the guy had, he had 3 foot of air with maybe 3/16 of a cross up, like a little lean and a little turn.
By the way,
like,
no way he landed that. No way.
That guy's killing it. And now you see Brian, first guy to do a 360 and the Superman stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's all two flips now. It's insanity. When you started, what kinds of moves when you were in your teens, you're young, like what kind of stuff were people trying to pull off at the beginning?
Yeah, you got to think, I came from motocross and supercross, and I was in an era where I was, you know, finishing somewhere around fourth, fifth place at the Nationals and supercross, which means I was just out of that realm of getting a factory ride. Factory ride, you know, I basically get the good bikes and the parts, everything paid for. I was a privateer, where nowadays the top 20 got factory rides.
Right.
So my point with that is that made me kind of look other places. On practice days, me and my buddies started doing tricks on dirt bikes. And basically just can-cans, knack-knacks. That's basically where you just take one leg and put it on the other side of the bike in the air. And just basic tricks, you know, heel clickers, no handers, no leggers. And that's kind of where it started. And then we started studying BMX, you know, and what they were doing on BMX bikes. And that's kind of how it elevated. And then the first movie came out, The Crusty Demons of Dirt, was kind of this like cultish dirt bike video that opened up the realm of freestyle motocross. And then 99 X Games is when we went and had a meeting with ESPN and said, hey, we can turn this into a sport. And we created a course and a judging system, and that's when it took off. That's when the sport really kicked off.
Did you ride BMX as well? Did you come up with ideas that you wanted to do on the motorcycle and said, let's try it on a bike first?
Yeah,
The sort of a slow motion version of it.
Oh, yeah. It's before foam pits. You know, it's before, like, we learned stuff on dirt. Like, I learned to backflip a dirt bike on dirt. There was no padding. Like, that's why I broke a lot of bones and, you know, a lot of surgeries, but that was the beginning. I'm glad it's elevated into foam pits and airbags now that have been a lot safer. But yeah, it's a lot of, I tried to backflip first on a bicycle, just kind of fool myself, like, oh, if I can flip a bicycle, I can flip a dirt bike.
Yeah.
Two totally different things.
It is like, different. Yeah.
Completely different. So I did try some stuff on BMX, but I've never been a great BMX rider. I hit
all
curbs.
All that pedaling.
Who wants to
do all that pedaling?
Yeah, I just kind of went to dirt bikes when I was 10 years old. I grew up in a small town in Nebraska, and once I got on a dirt bike, that was my way out, my way to go see the country and go do, you know, adventure. And so I graduated kind of from a bicycle. Once I was down with bicycles, I didn't really mess with them anymore. Mm-hmm. You know?
There is something about that emotional part about doing a backflip for the first time, mm-hmm. or doing anything for the first time. I could remember, you know, standing on some roof wanting to make the jump into the swimming pool in the neighbor's yard when you're 11 and you're kind of seized up and there's that weird go for it moment.
Yeah.
And some people don't have that go for it moment, and then other people really struggle with it. Like I never did anything that you've done, but I used to ride BMX and there was a loading dock behind the Gelsons on Laurel Canyon. And it's like, I gotta go off that loading dock on my BMX bike. And I struggled with it for like a long time. Yeah. I don't know why it was necessary for me to do it, but it was super important. You know, eventually I did it. I would eat shit all the time, but yet my son doesn't have an ounce of that shit, by the way. What is that thing?
He doesn't even want to hear that story. Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? There's that thing where you like, you wrestle with it, you're scared of it, and now you have to go do it. And it kind of plagues you a little bit until you do it. Mm-hmm. Is it you identifying with that feeling?
I always would wonder, like, I'd be on the floor at X Games, I'd look up in the crowd, you know, 50, 60,000 people, and I'd always be like, why are we the guys down here? What is the difference between my mindset and the crowd's mindset? And I think it's just the ability to like, that fear level of, like, man, am I going to make it? Should I try the backflip? Should I try this jump? To where I think we just have the ability to shut that off more and go, hey, let's focus on what we're doing. Don't worry about the fear. Don't worry about the injuries. We're just having, you know, I'm still scared, you know, at point times, but my level, I think our level of fear was just way higher, you know, than the average person is kind of the way I could put it. And yeah, I had those moments where I had to conquer things and it ate at me and I had to do it, you know, and it was just me and myself, right? This battle with myself, like learning the backflip. I'm like, I did it by myself one day and no one was around. I was so mad at myself.
Where is everybody?
I was like so mad that I couldn't do it because I tried and I kept crashing and breaking bones. I'd come back and I'd be like, if I don't complete the backflip, I'll never win again. And, you know, and it just ate at me. And I went out in the backyard. I just remember I was like, I just went and had that moment where I'm like, I'm landing this. I'm not letting go. I'm hanging on. And I came around, rotated, and rode away. And I was like, that was one of those moments where I was like, I just conquered a fear. And I think you carry that through life. And that's why I have my kids in racing. And I think whether they make it or not in racing at a professional level and be able to make enough money and retire, it's really just about them being able to conquer their fears and set goals, accomplish goals at a high level, and they're going to carry that through life.
No, I agree. There's a picture of the CZ Rider poster.
Look at that. Yeah. God, what a badass. Wow.
See, that's my level of riding right there. On a good day, that's what I look like.
I'm telling you, no way he landed that. There's not a second poster of him just eating shit on the ground.
His
iconic.
That poster was as popular as like Farrah Fawcett's poster for the dirt bike guys. And his rear wheel's 31 inches off the ground. Like, that's how. His wheel is the height of a dining room table off the ground. Yeah. Like if you have a medium sized dog,
could be
that's how high.
You can barely clear it.
And he's got a little bit of a. I wouldn't call it a tabletop, but it's got a little cross up in it.
Yeah.
Hey, as long as you're going down memory lane, you can find a picture of me catching a little air in my dirt front lawn back in the day on some red line or Huffy or
intentional
something.
Intentional or just no brakes? Because I've been down that road before.
I built a ramp out of like logs and an ironing board and stuff, and we had a dirt lawn in my house, and I got down the street, and I was going for it. You know, it was interesting when I was watching the NBA dunk-offs last weekend. Now the big thing is they jump over people. You know what I mean? They get some tall guy out there and then they jump over the top of that guy. But in BMX, we'd always lay guys down after the ramp. Like you had to jump over a bunch of your friends who just lay down on the ground. That's a weird... It's an interesting...
It's an interesting
wiring,
thing. There's
right?
other things you can put down on the ground other than your friends.
And also, what's the point of the guy who's closest to the ramp? That guy's in no danger. You know what I mean? It's the guy
at
the end
unless
who
you
gets
pull
all
out
the
and miss the ramp.
See, I've had a few of underbuilt ramps where the first two guys go over and the third guy goes through it and hits the bricks.
I know that.
Breaks the wood, hits the bricks. That guy, the front guy, he's getting bricks on a mountain bike.
The idea that a sheet of plywood was considered a big ticket item at our house is a bad sign. But we just find planks and logs and stuff and try to put ourselves something together.
You can't just go to the store and buy the wood.
How? I mean, Brian, how much of the your world is engineering? You know, I mean, how much of that were you involved? Oh, yeah. There's a picture of me getting some major air.
That's way more poster material right there.
Yeah, screw that CZ Rider. Yeah.
Look at the bars, the bend on the bars. They're like jiving a bus.
I like the, you see the logs scattered out front, like somebody cut a tree down and we found shoved some logs under a thing and my, had nice, sweet dirt lawn living in North Hollywood.
Hey, look, you're almost over the bug, over the VW bug in the background. I mean, it's a little bit of perspective thing, I think, but maybe two or three more tries.
Yeah.
You could have jumped the Volkswagen.
Yeah. No helmets back then, just a big old 70s fro. That's how you had to protect your head.
That's sometimes better than a helmet.
Yeah. You didn't even know what a helmet was back then. Right?
The thing I remember about doing my lawn.
And whose bike was that, by the way?
I was my bike. I would get a pair of Redline forks and a Moto Mag, and I cobbled this bike together over like a birthday and two Christmases or something.
A lot of trading, a lot of street deals.
And the house was only like 10 feet behind where my stepdad took the picture. So
once the lawn is beautiful.
Once you landed, you had to bring it down fast. Otherwise, you're going to hit the house. But how much engineering? I mean, you know, it's like I think about this. When you see like Evel Knievel's like landing ramps and stuff, like back in the day, he just have 4x8 planks like on a van, you know, and like strapped down with bungee cords. Like it didn't have a lot of science. Also, like, if you ever look at Evel Knievel and, like, Caesar's Palace, his landing ramp was, like, 5 feet wide.
Yeah.
Like, why not spread it out a little, Evel? Give yourself
it's on a budget.
It's on a budget. I don't know. Don't skimp on the landing ramp. But how much, when you're doing a trick, how much do you have to engineer that trick?
Like, yeah, I feel like that was a big part of when the sport started, that we felt like a normal dirt bike wasn't good enough for freestyle motocross. You'd look at the BMX bikes, the pegs, and the way the bars would spin all the way around, and just certain things we started trying to emulate on a dirt bike, which is pretty hard. I mean, when a dirt bike's made with aluminum frame and certain components you can't really weld on or change, we did create dirt bikes that the bars would spin. That was a tough one. The big thing was everyone cut out their plastics. The first thing, that was the thing. You cut your fenders short. You cut holes in the grab so you could grab on the fenders or grab onto the seat to do double grabs and Superman seat grabs. That was the biggest thing, I think, just cutting plastic out. And then relatively supercross suspension, stiff suspension, because the jumps were so big that you'd hit in freestyle to get enough air to do a trick, because that's the hardest thing, trying to do a trick if you need the air time, right? So building these big jumps. We created the first ramps, the first metal ramps, the first mobile landing ramp. We created that. We transported it to our first show, which was Harley-Davidson Bike Week in Daytona. And we didn't have time to test it, unfortunately. And so we set up this ramp to ramp on blacktop in front of this huge crowd. And we didn't have time. I mean, it was showtime. We show up. And we line up. No one wanted to hit it because it was so intimidating. Because it was like the Evel Knievel landing, real short little landing, like way out in space, it looked like. And so anyway, no one would hit it. No one hit it. And finally, I got that moment where I'm like, you know what? No one's going to hit it. Everyone's being, you know, and I'm like, I'm just hitting it. I hit it second, third gear, on the gas, hit the ramp. And I was going past the landing as I was still going up.
Wow.
I was like, this is bad. And I've had a few moments in my life where I've like seen my life flash before my eyes. That was definitely one of them. I was like still going up. I'm looking, the crowds on either side, thousands of people. And I'm like, dude, this is so bad. And I'm going up, 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 up. And then I come down to the blacktop landing about 140 feet to flats. And I just stick my head to the side of the bars because I knew I was just going to take it to the chin with the bars. I just landed so hard it blew the wheels off the bike. And ended up luckily only shattering my ankle and cutting like my neck and the handlebars. And I just remember sliding across the concrete and I was like, dude, it was so bad. And I was like, this crowd was kind of like, was that supposed to happen or was this like part of the show? But it was definitely a bad first.
Anybody who's ever seen this kind of riding on asphalt, like on a street, it's unnerving. I don't know why the dirt seems to soften the mental blow or something, but they had these guys came out in the street in front of Kimmel's Theater on Hollywood once, and I remember just looking out the window, looking at all the asphalt, the street, then the ramps, and I was like, I'm freaked out. Like, there's something about doing it on the blacktop, and yes, that feeling, you know, I've experienced it, I think. Hopefully everyone's had a little of it in their life where you realize you're in the air. There's nothing you can do. You're not going to make it. This isn't going to work. And it's a feeling that you can't really describe it because it's not exactly fear, although there's a lot of fear in there. But there's also a lot of calculating going on as well. Like, what are we going to do to this parachute hasn't opened? What are we going to do about this? But
before the science was involved, it was just trial and error, like you're saying.
Big time trial and error. And that was the toughest part about creating the sport. We were the guinea pigs, you know, like, so we had each trick was so new, and we were just creating trick after trick. And X Games made it a deal where if you came the next year, you had to have new tricks. Like, if you brought your same tricks, you got scored down. So there was this pressure of like constantly developing and developing. And like I said, the backflip was a big moment in dirt bikes. I didn't think a dirt bike could backflip that easy and ride away. And Pastrana was one of the first guys to master that. And it just took the sport to another level. And when he, years down the road, you know, I was, did the 360. I saw him kind of trying it on the internet right before X Games. Mm-hmm. So I got it down real quick. I had a foam pit at that time. Went to X Games, and it was the last minute of the run, and I was like, you know what, I'm just going for it. Like, and I didn't know if I could land it. I never landed it before on dirt, and it's different. Like you said, you landed on foam. A big difference between getting the balls up to land it on dirt. The consequences are much higher. And then go to concrete, yes, there is another level of that too. Sure. But X Games dirt was always hard as a rock, so same thing. I went and hit the jump. I just look at the crowd, LA Coliseum, it was just full, and so much energy and hype. And I'm like, dude, if I'm going to crash, I'm going to crash. There's medics here. There's the TV. At least it's going to be on TV. And I come around and hit the ramp and just twist as hard as I could and end up doing probably the best 360 to date because it was just so flat and so just really, really good as far as the rotation. Come in, land. I almost missed the landing and somehow save it. And it was just like an iconic moment, you know, like in any way in our sport, you know.
But look, what you guys started was huge. I'm doing that stuff because now we have monster trucks doing backflips, right? And it's crazy to see because they weigh, you know, 10, tons 000, and tons and tons, and you're like, it almost looks slow motion while they do it. Like, how is it going to go around? It's a monster truck.
Yeah,
like it's incredible.
I'm thinking about X Games circa 1999, and I'm trying to think, was that the one in San Francisco?
Yeah.
Jimmy and I were at that one.
Were you? Do we have a video? Let's see if we can get a video of the 360.
I'd like to see
360,
that too.
Yeah,
it's a little rough footage.
That's 2003, yeah.
2003?
Yeah, backflip didn't come out until 01 or 02.
They didn't,
they didn't have YouTube back then.
In the day, you know, people forget, like, X Games was pretty crude when it started off. Like, they had Street Luge.
There was a guy
named Lugenstein or something. And he was just like a big dude who laid down on a skateboard. And I'm like, what's so special about laying on a mechanic's creeper and going down a hill? Like, I could have done that.
If you had to change oil on the way through, hit a car and pull the plug.
Yeah, they had a lot of sort of fringe sports back then. It wasn't what it is now. All right, let's take a look at it.
So. Time is out. Not sure if this can count. Is he going to bust up new, ladies and gentlemen? Oh, Deegan! He ran 360! Oh, my God!
There's Haley. Yeah, it's a baby.
Oh, that's great. The announcer screaming is great.
It's Cameron Steele. that was it.
Clearly he was not ready for that because he was speculating as if you're going to try something new, and new you did. All right, let me tell people where to go. The podcast, the Deegans, the new episodes every Wednesday on iTunes and Podcast One as well. Website, briandeegan.com as well. Haley, where do we send people for your information?
So actually, my website's getting updated with everything right now, and just haleydeegan.com, and our merchandise stuff is where kind of I sell all our diecast shirts, stuff like that, is shopdeegan38.
Matt, you got Geico?
Yes, I do. Sorry, I got so into the story video. There we go. Yeah, Geico. If you guys own or rent your home, you know it can be a lot of work. But you know what's easy? Bundling policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. And that's a good thing because you already have a lot to do around your home already. So you just go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com.
All right. You can go to adamcarolla.com for all the live shows around the country. And if you want to see Uppity or any of our racing docs, you can go to Netflix. But if you want to get the Blu-ray, go to Chassis, CHASSY.com as well. What do you got, Motorator? Oh, we've got a car show coming up.
CarCast Live, March 21st at the Peterson Museum. It's a car show screening of one of the docs, some maybe some extra footage you haven't seen yet, and a live podcast. Tickets are available at adamcarolla.com.
So until next time, Adam Carolla for Brian Deegan and Haley Deegan and Matt the Motorator DeAndrea saying, keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.